The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Allifair Burke. She joins us on the telephone in Manhattan. Hello, Allifair.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I had you on for your last book, The Wife, which just was a knockout.
And thank you.
And here we are with a new book and a very different book. Can you give our listeners some insight into your approach with this one?
Yeah, so The Better Sister is about a woman named Chloe Taylor, who is a very successful Manhattan editor and writer and a well-respected journalist. And she is married to a successful lawyer. Do you notice a theme? These perfect people in Manhattan. She's married to Adam McIntosh. She's a successful lawyer. And she's a stepmom to his son, Ethan. And the twist in their family is that her husband, Adam, is Chloe's sister's ex-husband, if that makes sense. So it's a complicated family tree. So we've got these two sisters. Nikki stayed home in Cleveland where Chloe grew up, and she was always kind of the one who was a little bit in trouble and didn't quite get out of school and was always sticking close to home and close to her parents. And Chloe was the one with big dreams and big ambitions and kind of met all of her goals in life. And Nikki's ex-husband, Adam, winds up marrying Chloe, and years later, fast forward, the sisters are estranged, not surprisingly. I imagine that's hard to get over when someone marries your husband. But Adam gets murdered, and his son Ethan becomes a suspect. And these two estranged sisters, these two very different women, have to reunite to try to help this teenager that they both love and have both mothered in different ways. So it's kind of their story of coming back together. And also, since it's a thriller, there's some twists and turns and surprises along the way.
Nikki is a little bit older than Chloe, and Chloe absolutely worshipped Nikki when they were girls, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the big sister pattern of, like, you've got the fun, daring big sister, but it's also as Chloe outmatures her, essentially, she becomes the more responsible one and the more successful one, and, you know, it's the sibling loyalties and rivalry, right, can kind of sometimes go hand in hand. So they have a complicated relationship.
They also had a troubled family life when they were young.
Yes, and I think part of what the book tries to deal with is the question of can you leave family patterns behind? I think part of what drives Chloe so much, part of why she did have such, you know, big ambitions to get out of, you know, her family patterns, was because of the darker things that were happening in the household and the things that she wanted to be different. And so, you know, in her mind, she's created her own family. She's in New York. She's got her own story. And she thinks that nothing that happened back in Cleveland in her house affected her at all. And she has that in common with her husband, Adam, that he also was someone with a complicated family and likes to think that, you know, the two of them just started their own roots together. And as the secrets unfold, you know, part of the question is, you know, can you really escape the patterns that are sometimes deeply set in families?
Allifair Burke joins us. Her new novel is The Better Sister. We have a situation here which I think is becoming much more common, where Chloe, the woman, is outshining her husband Adam, the man, as far as income, as far as fame. In fact, Adam was a very successful prosecutor, a federal prosecutor, and he's very unhappy, isn't he?
Yeah, it's sort of the question of what is success and how do very ambitious people measure it and how much is ever enough. So by the standards of where Chloe and Adam and Nikki grew up, you know, Adam was a success from the start. You know, he was the first kid in his family to go to college, let alone law school. He became a county prosecutor in Cleveland. And then with Chloe's help, he got a job at the Southern District of New York as a federal prosecutor, which, as we're all learning now, you know, is one of the best jobs you can possibly get as a lawyer in this country. And yet he finds himself second fiddle to Chloe, who goes from being a magazine writer to an editor-in-chief to a best-selling novelist, and then she kind of takes off on social media and becomes almost an icon to a certain part of the feminist crowd, and she's out-earning him. And, you know, part of the book explores his decision to leave the prosecutor's office, which was very much part of his identity, and go to a, you know, a big law firm where he doesn't necessarily feel good about his work. And I guess one of the things that readers can think about is, did he do that for him? Did he do it for Chloe? Did that maybe lead to why he was killed?
Alifair, how are we learning that that's such a plum job? Can you explain that to our listeners? Some of them are probably wondering what you meant.
Some people read the newspaper nowadays, and mm-hmm. some people hide from the newspaper. But, you know, with the political news and the way the politics is running into the Department of Justice investigations, you know, the Southern District of New York has been in the news a lot lately for prosecuting Michael Cohen, for example, and there's pending cases involving the president and people surrounding him. So that's what I was referring to.
I love it when you talk about prosecutors, Alifair, because I know that you know what you're talking about. And our listeners are probably wondering what I mean. You have a bit of experience in that line of work, don't you?
I do. I worked as a prosecutor out of law school for 5 years in Portland, Oregon. But then since then, I teach criminal law and criminal procedure at Hofstra Law School on Long Island. And when I'm not making things up for fiction books, I write very long law review articles with hundreds of footnotes about prosecutors and their responsibilities and powers. So I spend a lot of time thinking about prosecutors, both fictional and real.
Alifair Burke joins us. Her new novel is The Better Sister. Another thing that I think feels very real is their summer home is located in a particular area, which I'm guessing you're somewhat familiar with.
Yeah, so East Hampton is one of the Hamptons, as people call it, but on the South Fork of the East End of Long Island. And my husband and I have been visiting out there. My literary agent, listen to me. I visit my literary agent in the Hamptons. It all sounds very fancy. But I've been visiting them out there since I moved to Manhattan, I guess, in 2001. And we bought a house there a few years ago, so I've gotten pretty familiar with it. And it's an interesting place because most people, when they hear about the Hamptons, if they've heard about it at all, it's because celebrities go there in the summer and, you know, you see pictures on Instagram of people hobnobbing with the elites. But, you know, that's a fairly recent development out there. Traditionally, it was a fishing and farming community. And so you've got these kind of interesting, when you go out there, there's really kind of three communities out there. There's the long-termers, the original people from out there who are from like a handful of families who fished and farmed. And then you've got a lot of immigrants out there who are also there year-round. And then you have the summer people, the city people and the tourists. And they're all sort of mutually dependent on each other and, you know, somewhat suspicious of each other at the same time. So the last few books have all been set between both the city and the East End of Long Island.
You allude to that transition in the communities there with a passing reference to what I think used to be kind of a farm stand, and now it's a really fancy grocery store.
Yeah. it has a real-life analog. I don't use the real name of it, we are frequent consumers there.
Okay.
They make food out of prepared foods out of the things that they farm, and it's better than any restaurant you can find.
Alifair, having read your previous book, The Wife, I see a lot of continuity between these two books in that The Wife was prescient, as in preceding the Me Too movement. You were so on top of that without it even having happened yet as you were writing it. And now we're sort of coming through the tail end of that. And your protagonist, she's really involved in this in a way, isn't she?
Yes. So part of Chloe Taylor's newfound icon status is because she writes a series of articles for her fictional magazine, obviously. But it's a series of articles I think you could imagine that features Me Too type of stories, but from people who aren't celebrities. And what she does, and which I'd actually love someone to do, is she pairs the celebrity Me Too people who have come out with their personal stories with lesser-known people who have very parallel stories to bring attention to them. And so in my fictional book, this series of articles leads to big corporate changes and a lot of CEOs being replaced and, you know, real workplace changes instead of just a question of, you know, it being a matter of Hollywood and these higher profile jobs. So in any event, but part of the tone of the book is that the potential backlash against that movement. So when Chloe's husband gets killed, one of the questions is whether it could be related to threats that Chloe's getting. I think, you know, anyone who's outspoken politically or culturally on social media knows the kinds of threats you get in return and the horrible comments people will make to women online. And so Chloe is very much a target of that kind of a backlash. And it's a question she wonders if maybe that could have gotten her husband killed.
I've got to admit, Alifair, when we get into the little sections where we have the online commentary, I said to myself, holy smokes, is this really Alifair Burke saying these words on the page? I just about fainted.
Awful. Isn't it awful? Yeah.
I almost died. And it made me think, and I need to mention to our listeners that aren't aware of this, that your dad is the novelist James Lee Burke. And in the Dave Robichaux series, whenever his character, Alifair Robichaux, swears, her dad gets upset. And I kept thinking of that whenever you'd say something like that.
Well, I have to the actual Alifair Burke, as opposed to Alifair Robichaux, maybe it's from working in the district attorney's office for all those years. I do cuss a little bit in my personal life more than my husband, who was in the Army. In fact, the first time he heard me talking to my district attorney friends, he looked at me like, who are you right now? And I do talk that way in front of my father sometimes, and my father has grown accustomed to it. But at first it was kind of like, whoa, what did she just say? But no, the parts that I wrote where you actually do, you don't see the threats to Chloe online or the comments made about her online, they're not even told from her perspective how she feels them. Mm-hmm. They're just on the page for the reader to read. And the internet's full of that stuff every day. Mm. And I think even what I put in the book isn't even the worst of it. You could probably get away with saying a lot of those things online and not even get your account suspended. So that is part of our discourse right now. And I wanted readers who don't necessarily experience themselves to have a sense of what that's like, because that's what Chloe's living with.
She looks at these comments and she occasionally responds to them, which in my view seems like kind of a mistake.
Yeah, I don't respond to things like that. I quietly, you can mute people so that they don't even know that you've blocked them, mm-hmm. but that way you don't see them again. And that's kind of the passive way to just ignore it. But some people, you know, believe in dragging them into the light. And so some people do, you know, share it with their followers and have some kind of, you know, clap back, I suppose you could call it. And the idea is to expose them. And lots of times they quickly delete their accounts and, you know, run off under whatever rock they came from.
You call them trolls.
Yes, yeah. The trolls.
Trolls. Alifair Burke joins us. Her book is The Better Sister, and I follow you on Twitter, and you always seem very pleasant on there.
I try to be nice.
Yeah. and I enjoy – Twitter is fun for me because I follow a lot of writers like you. I follow your friend Laura Lippman.
Yeah.
I follow her husband, who just cracks me up.
I like it that we're calling him Laura Lippman's husband.
I like that, too. We're not even going to say who he is.
Yes, exactly. People can Google it if they don't know. But,
yeah,
they're a good Twitter couple, and Harlan Coben's great on Twitter. There's a whole bunch of people that are terrific on there.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. It's the Book Nook, and I've been joined again by Alifair Burke. We're talking about her new novel, The Better Sister. I loved your portrayal of the son, and I don't want to do any spoilers on the son, but he's such a complicated kid, and I felt a lot of empathy for him. Can you tell us about him without giving away too much?
Yeah, thanks. So Ethan is a 16-year-old who's he's a good kid, but you get the impression that he knows he's not quite like either one of his parents and is never going to be able to shine like that, and it probably keeps him a little bit shy and a little reticent. But he's funny. He, at the same time, knows that Chloe's not his mother, and he knows that he's got his biological mother, who's, you know, his dad's ex-wife, lost custody of him, and he knows why. And that's part of what the reader learns, is something really bad happened that made Nikki lose custody. And he understands that, and you've got to wonder how that's affected him. But like a lot of kids, there's a scene in the book where Chloe even thinks about, you know, when you're a kid, you know the difference between right and wrong, but you don't know the degrees of wrong, you know? So you sometimes can't compare the severities of harms. And so when his father gets killed and it becomes clear the police are suspecting either him or Chloe, Ethan does some things that look suspicious.
Yeah.
And so he becomes a suspect. But much to my surprise, I've had kids in my last three books. I don't have kids.
Uh-huh.
And I sometimes don't like reading books or watching TV shows where the kids in them don't strike me as realistic. And so I think I've been especially careful about how I depict the kids on the page. So my poor niece and nephews are constant research. I ask them, like, what's the most expensive thing you own? Like, what do you think of as an expensive thing? And they laugh at me, and they're like, tennis shoes, obviously. I'm like, right, tennis shoes. Because how would I know those things? But
that's handy.
Yeah, I'm very blessed to be very close to three nephews and a niece. So they're my research.
Mm. Don't you have a brother who's a prosecutor?
I have a brother who's a former prosecutor.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. In Arizona.
Your dad's talked about him before.
Yes.
And then you have a sister who lives out in Montana and helps your dad run his media stuff for his
yeah,
publishing.
I have two sisters, Pamela, who kind of my dad's right-hand person, who does his social media and helps him out with emails and things like that. And then I have a sister, Andre, who is lives in Kansas, and she's got two kids. And she's a former school psychologist. She stays home now, and her kids they're all like growing up now. So I think they're all between 15 and 21 now. So it's crazy.
Well, you know about being a kid. In fact, you were a kid in Kansas, right? Didn't you grow up in Wichita?
I did. I grew up in Wichita, Kansas. My nephew gave me the biggest compliment once. I was teaching him about the origins of hip-hop because he likes rap music, and I realized he knew nothing about rap music. So I made him listen to, like, old-school hip-hop and rap music, and he was both impressed and mortified that I knew all the words to various songs. And he said, okay, you're the only person in your family that I believe was ever a child. So I took it as a big compliment.
Well, when you were a kid in Wichita, that's when someone named BTK was operating, right?
Yeah, well, it was the tail end of it. So I was born in Florida. My dad and mom moved us to Wichita, Kansas in 1977. I'm showing how old I am. And I was kicking and screaming because there was no beach. I didn't understand how we could live somewhere where there was no beach. I still feel that way.
Mm.
And they said, oh, you know, it's going to be safer and we'll have a nicer house and it'll be so much better. You'll have a better school. And we were still unpacking the moving boxes when the police department announced that there was a serial killer who had already killed 7 people. And if you took a map and put pins in the map of where he had killed people, our safe, new, nice house was right in the middle of all of it. So, yeah, I grew up in a time where if you meet anybody who grew up in Kansas in those years into the mid-'80s, even when people were still afraid of him, the rituals, you'd come home, you'd check the phone line immediately to make sure it worked because he would cut the phone lines. People had locks on their basement doors because people thought he got in through the basement. It turned out he would just knock on the door and people let him in. But you have padlocks on the basement, check the phone line. Most people had like a room that you could lock yourself into. So ours was the downstairs bathroom. You could run in there. There was no window and you could lock the doors. Mm. And the phone cord you could pull in there because, of course, back then there was corded phones. So, it was an odd way to grow up. But because my father's also fascinated with crime, as you know, we would sit around and talk about, we'd basically do amateur profiling, and I was in grade school. So I always grew up kind of obsessed with the idea that somebody who's capable of doing really evil things is probably lurking right next to you, which turned out to be true. He was, the president of his church and had a job in code enforcement, you know, supposedly a good father. So
that church affiliation ended up being his downfall, didn't it? Didn't he use the church computer to...
Yeah, it's fascinating. If people don't know about this case, it's worth going down the rabbit hole and reading about it, because it really is a case where it was his, he really had gotten away with it, and it was his ego and changing technology that did him in, because he had stopped killing, which is fascinating in and of itself, and then he came forward because the local newspaper did a big front page article about the 30th anniversary of his death, and there was a local professor was writing a book about him, and I think it got under his skin that a front page article about him featured another person. Oh. It wasn't about him. And so to taunt the police, he sent mementos from a victim they had never tied to him, saying, you don't know the full story. I'm still out here, and I've killed other people you don't know about. And the hunt was back on again, and he got into this cat-and-mouse game with them, you know, leaving them notes and all the little things he used to do that were straight out of, you know, Pulp Fiction. And he said, I want to send you a computer disk. Is it safe to send you a disk? And they said, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we can't trace a disk. And they got this floppy disk and looked under properties, and there's his name, and he had initialized it at the church. And they got DNA evidence from the daughter. It's a long story, but... they were able to confirm it was him, and when he was arrested, he actually was betrayed. He was like, that was so unfair. You told me that the disc was untraceable. Like, he really believed that he had some code with them and that they had violated it. It was bizarre way of thinking.
I remember your dad saying something about how his murders were so horrific that to this day, they have never publicized what he actually was doing.
Well, I think it's written, it's almost written in code, and I used to see that at the DA's office. You'd see how it was, things were written in the passive voice, or, you know, I think you can figure out what it was, but it was more about the torture. It's gross to talk about, but he did not rape his victims, but he would torture them and find other ways to... You know, it was purient for him, obviously, and he left his DNA behind, but it was by torturing them. So it was really awful.
Yeah.
Horrible, horribly awful, and it included children, too.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah. Okay, enough of that. My guest is Alifair Burke. We're talking about her book, The Better Sister. We really are talking about it, and I think when readers are finished reading the book, the thing that they're going to be talking about is... Who is the better sister, Chloe or Nikki? Who is the better sister? That's a question that you pose in our minds, Alifair.
Yeah, my publisher is doing something kind of cheeky on Instagram right now. Speaking of social media, they're doing all these polls of who's the better sister between all of these sister pairings, like, you know, the Jenner sisters and the Brontes, like, who's your favorite one? But, you know, I think it, Nikki and Chloe, when they're reunited, it's a question of all those stereotypes that families fall into. If, I mean, think about it. I don't need to be personal. Do you have kids?
No.
The way people talk about kids is just so bizarre if you think about it. Like, little babies, they'll have a newborn baby and a two-year-old, and they'll be like, oh, he's the leader, or she's the smart one, mm-hmm. or, oh, she's the little rule follower. And I think parents, particularly when they have more than one kid, they kind of slot the kids into these places, and that's kind of the role you play within the family. And it's a weird way to talk about people, as if these traits are permanent and they're not going to change over time and it's not situational. And I think that Chloe and Nikki were always typecast as Chloe was the good, smart one and Nikki was kind of the wild, fun child. And, you know, now they're in their 40s and they're so much more complicated than that. And mm-hmm. when they come together, kind of they're almost getting to know each other all over again.
Are you the youngest?
I'm the youngest.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your dad has you slotted in as Alifair Genius.
Exactly.
Yeah. The last time we had him on the program, which I believe...
I know of these family roles we play. Yeah.
The last time I interviewed him a few months ago for his New Iberia Blues Robichaud novel, I mentioned to you that we talked about The Wife, and he loved that book so much, and he went into Alifair as a Genius riff, and it was 3 or 4 minutes long. We had to cut some of it out. It was just,
yes,
I mean, come
I know,
on.
He's, you, of course, thank you for cutting it out. Let's just say my father is an unreliable narrator when it comes to his children. As he should be, right? I guess unconditional love and all that.
Well, Chloe's kind of an unreliable narrator, too.
Yeah, the last three books, so the Ex, the Wife, and the Better Sister, I kind of see them as a thematic trilogy. They're not a series. They're all standalones, but they explore a lot of the same themes. And they all have narrators that you could call unreliable, but I think it's cheating if the protagonist or if you have a character lie directly to the reader.
Mm.
You know, they're not going to lie in their internal monologue, and they're not going to lie directly to the reader. But people have reasons for withholding information, or they may remember things with bias. I mean, any psychologist will tell you that we don't believe things in a vacuum. We believe them through the lens of social context and other things we believe we know. So, you know, Nikki and Chloe even remember family events differently from their own perspectives. So part of some of putting the clues together is a matter of sometimes Chloe having to connect the dots between her own little pieces of her own knowledge. She hasn't quite put them together in the right context.
Well, Alifair, it's always a pleasure talking to you about your work.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy talking books with you.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. My guest has been Alifair Burke, and her new one is The Better Sister. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.